Hello, everyone, and welcome to Staffer, the show about people who work in government or politics at any level and what they take from the experience. I'm your host, Jim Papa, a partner at Global Strategy Group and a former staffer myself. Today, I'm excited to welcome Sandra Douglas Morgan, president of the NFL's Las Vegas Raiders. Sandra is a trailblazer. In addition to being the first Black and Asian woman to serve in the role of president of an NFL franchise, she has led a career in which she has broken barriers several times. Prior to joining the Raiders, she served in leadership positions across the sports, gaming, legal, and corporate sectors, and has served as a chief regulator, director, attorney, and advisor to resorts, casinos, and telecommunications companies. And of course, she has served in government too. After graduating from UNLV's Boyd Law School in 2003, she went to work as an attorney in private practice and then in-house at MGM, and after a few years, served in city government. Her time working for the city of North Las Vegas saw her elevate through several positions, and she ultimately served as the city's chief legal officer. Political leaders took notice. Republican Governor Brian Sandoval named her to serve on the Nevada Gaming Commission, and Democratic Governor Steve Sisolak subsequently appointed her chair of the Nevada Gaming Control Board. So over the course of her incredible career, Sandra has worked for leaders in the gaming industry, top law firms, and as a director and advisor to companies like Allegiant and Fidelity National Financial. Her leadership has been widely recognized by national organizations and publications. She's been named a member of the Power 100 by Ebony, among the most influential women in business and politics by the Urban Chamber of Commerce, and Attorney of the Year by the Las Vegas chapter of the National Bar Association. I am so honored to have Sandra as a guest on Staffer, and I am so pleased to be able to present our conversation to you. We recorded this episode on Friday, April 5th. I hope you enjoy it. Sandra Douglas Morgan, welcome to Staffer.
Thanks for having me, Jim.
It is my pleasure. I am really excited to be talking with you today. As listeners of this show know, I like to get to know a little bit about our guests from the very beginning when we have these conversations. So can you just tell me a little bit about where you grew up and about your family?
Sure. I'm a child of Las Vegas, as I like to say. I've been here ever since I was 2 years old. My parents met here in Las Vegas, and my dad actually was here because of Nellis Air Force Base. He was in the Air Force. And my mother always says that they retired here because I was actually born on an Air Force base in Missouri. My sister was born on an Air Force base in Ohio, and Las Vegas did not have any mosquitoes. So this would have been in the late 70s, early 80s, you know, a town of about 400,000 maybe max then. And, you know, it's grown incredibly, obviously. But, you know, I grew up in Las Vegas, went to, you know, elementary, middle, and high school here, went to undergrad just up north at the University of Nevada in Reno. We'll go Wolfpack. Ended up going to UNLV for law school. Honestly, didn't think I would end up there because the law school was new. And I remember being an intern at the legislature when there was funding, actually, the Ways and Means Committee kind of appropriated about $500,000 for the law school. And I just didn't think it would have been credited in time for me to go. And it was, you know, lightning speed, if you will. And so when I was a 1L in law school, I knew at that point that I would be able to take the bar anywhere. So that kind of risk, my risk tolerance was always very high, something I've worked on over the last couple decades. But went to law school there, was part of the third graduating class. Honestly thought I would end up leaving Nevada and never really have. I've just, the state's given me such incredible opportunities. You know, worked in private practice, went in-house at MGM, went to the public sector a couple times throughout my career, went to the city of North Las Vegas and AT&T, served as a regulator for the Athletic Commission and Gaming Commission, went back to private practice and yeah. Ended up at the wonderful Las Vegas Raiders.
Well, so because this program is about people who have worked in government or politics at any level and then gone on to do really interesting things, you really fit the bill for that. And your time at the city of Las Vegas, working in the council's office there, can you talk to us about that experience and what led you there?
Sure. It's the city of North Las Vegas. I'm very proud of that. It's a city north of Las Vegas. Definitely a growing city, probably at around, I want to say 260, 270,000 people now. And for me has always been, well, I've known this, has always been the the only minority majority city in the state of Nevada. wonderful people, you know, working there, of, you know, all different backgrounds. And I joined in 2008 after I was in-house, because the city was growing. It's one of the fifth fastest growing cities in the nation. Wow. And I always say, you know, Southern Nevada is definitely a land of opportunity for so many different reasons, but you can earn a good living, you know, be able to take care of your family on, with just a lot of the hospitality jobs that are here. So North Las Vegas was definitely a fast growing city. And I had a friend that I went to law school with that was working there. And, you know, they were talking about the planning and zoning commission meetings going till 1 a.m. because there was just so much development. And he said, we need help. And I went and joined them, and it was incredible. It was really, I think, a turning point for me professionally. I was there for 8 years and kind of worked my way up to become the city attorney, initially kind of starting on, you know, planning, land use, zoning, you know, public works, utilities. The city actually operated its own water and sewer treatment facility. You know, Parks Rec, own police department, own fire department, and, you know, was just kind of working on everything, ordinances, you know, anything with the like. When I worked my way up, I moved up to assistant city attorney, and then also supervised the criminal division as well. So the prosecution of misdemeanors in the city jurisdiction, obviously some of those would kind of bind over to district court or justice court, and it kind of gave me a balance of civil and criminal expertise. And then became the city attorney. So, you know, providing advice directly to the mayor and city council, and all of the other departments and jurisdictions. And, you know, with the city, you know, in Southern Nevada, there's I think it's a good Southern Nevada coalition of the cities of North Las Vegas, City of Henderson, City of Las Vegas, and Clark County. And all of those are included in Clark County. And that what makes up about the 2.5, 2.6 million people now that reside here. So there's a lot of Southern Nevada, you know, regional transportation commissions and planning coalitions and things like that. So it gave me just such a wide breadth of ability just to learn about so many different topics. But for me, and I know this sounds made, you know, odd, but the most important thing was every step of the way, every year, as I continue to grow, not only as a lawyer, but as a person, really always thinking about what is the purpose of government and the policy behind it, and what, you know, what needs do we have to be able to provide for our residents and our citizens, especially because I was city attorney during the Great Recession, when we went from the fifth fastest growing city to having a foreclosure on every street, which was definitely a difficult time. Ended up closing our jail in the middle of that, which includes obviously laying off, you know, a lot of people. Went from, I want to say, around 2,000 employees to maybe 1,200. So just a really difficult, difficult time, not only for obviously employees that serve the city, but the residents, right? Having to, you know, reduce, you know, things like senior meals and, you know, rec center hours and things like that at a time when people need those services the most. So I say that in that, you know, the city is booming again. I'm so incredibly proud of the mayor and council that are there now and the team that is there now. But that was a tough point, not only, and I lived in the city. So, you know, I have to think about what type of services do I want my kids to have. My kids played basketball and took dance classes at the rec centers as well. So just a really, really, I think a turning point for me, not only personally again, but professionally, in understanding and being able to advocate on what the residents actually need in that city.
Yeah. So I believe to my core that service in government is not only really meaningful, but it's also really helpful in circumstances outside of government.
Absolutely.
So, you know, given your time in the city of North Las Vegas, what does that help you translate in you know, boardrooms and in venues that you've experienced after that?
You know, I think, and I say this, when you're dealing with people and having to provide a service, again, a basic, in my mind, from a policy perspective of what people pay their taxes to be able to receive, whether it's, you know, being safe and making sure your police department and fire department are keeping you safe, making sure that the places that we inhabit and live are safe, right? Building codes, our roads, this is just the core. And I do think a lot of people just take that for granted. So I do think when you work in the public sector and you see these basic necessities that you're providing residents every day, some of which don't even, you know, maybe don't appreciate it, when you're dealing with something that's for profit, you remember that, you know, boy, you know, even if this is, you know, bringing in significant revenue and it's obviously going to help the economic impact of now the world that I'm in, the state, you know that there's so much more at stake when you're dealing in the public sector. And I think personally for me, it helps me put things in perspective. And, you know, also when you're dealing with, you know, things of crisis of, you know, things like the recession, the pandemic and things like that. And, you know, everyone, you know, then realizes what the value of government when you have kind of unfortunate circumstances like that. I know that's a really kind way to put it. It just really helps you kind of put things in perspective, understanding the importance of communication, collaboration, making sure that, you know, this is not a, I have to take this project because I want to make the most money. No, it's I have to be able to work with these other people to provide basic services to our community, to our citizens. And so it helped me really kind of put things in perspective. And honestly, I think it helped me with my communication skills. It helped me with collaboration. It helped me, you know, encourage my team now to be a little more vulnerable, take a step back, you know, step out of your office, understand what the other person across the hall is doing, to kind of meet that common goal that we're all striving for.
Yeah, let me pick up on that, because at the risk of embarrassing you, we did some research in preparation for this interview and pulled a whole bunch of quotes of things that CEOs and community leaders and political leaders have said about you. And I'm going to read some of them to you. Very practical, well-prepared, straight shooter. She rolls up her sleeves and digs in. Bright, organized, special, strong, proven leader, team builder, passionate advocate, independent voice, a pleasure to work with. And that's not all of them. I stopped after a while. I know that you can't have all of those adjectives, all those qualities in your mind every day, all day. So how do you think about leadership? And how would you describe the qualities of your leadership that you try to hold most dear?
Thank you for embarrassing me, Jim. But I think that,
you're welcome.
You know,
you're
when welcome. I just want to come to work and know that every person that I'm interacting with, even if I'm just listening, knows that I'm here because I want to do what's best for the organization. It's not going to be for a self-serving issue. It's not going to be because I'm selecting one department over the next or pitting someone or some issue over something else. That I, as a leader, they have to be able to trust that I'm going to do what's best for the organization. And even if it's maybe not something that they want to do, that I'll be able to explain to them why and why it's better for the greater good of the Raiders. And that's what I've tried. That's what I honestly learned from the city of North Las Vegas. That's what I've tried to take with me in every position that I've had since then. That I do try to be a straight shooter and not in a point where I'm being, you know, overly direct or, you know, a little too decisive, but I'm going to tell you what I think, but I'm also going to tell you why. And also as a lawyer, you know, I understand, and the biggest complaints are that people don't get calls back, right? They reach out and they never hear back. What I also learned kind of through the pandemic and through other crises is that people just want an answer. they prefer yes, obviously, but they would prefer no over nothing at all. And that really, really stuck with me. And so even if it's a, hey, I'm still reviewing this, I'll get back to you, or there's a couple of other things I want to work out, or, hey, I heard something you mentioned, I'm just kind of not checking, you know, questioning you, but I have to do my due diligence to make sure I'm making the best decision on the organization. Just getting back to them, I think, means so much. So that's something that I hope and I strive for every day, that people that I work with understand about me, that every decision is for what's best for the team.
And what about when you are hiring folks and onboarding people onto your team? Mm-hmm. What do you look for? And do you have any pet peeves?
I definitely want, when I say diverse, I'm not just talking about, you know, appearances and demographics and things like that. I want different people that think differently. You know, I strongly believe we need a mix of extroverts and introverts. We want people who are completely data driven and someone that just wants to think about the experience without, you know, maybe looking at, we have to have all of those different things because our fans are just so, you know, come from different areas and have different backgrounds and are of different ages and live different internationally. So we have to have that, I think, internally. I know internally we have to have that. I don't care for negative assumptions. It really, really bothers me. So when someone just totally, you know, says, well, you know, assumes a negative intent, that's what I'm trying to truly, you know, kind of weed out. It is, why not? You don't have to assume positive if we're not quite there yet, but let's just ask the person, and instead of assuming someone was trying to either sabotage or hurt or destroy your project or do something personal, right? If we come with a positive mindset and come with just an assumption of maybe there was a miscommunication, it fell through the cracks, I, you know, mistakenly was left off that email, instead of an intentional attempt to kind of exclude someone, that's a little bit of a pet peeve of mine, because once you take that layer off, it's like, okay, I see it differently. Maybe I interpreted it the wrong way.
Yes, that is such a great pet peeve. I've asked people and I've never gotten that answer before. And you're so right, because when that is present in a person or an organization, it can be cancerous. Yes. Like, it just grows. Mm-hmm. And so those assumptions build on one another and affect working relationships.
Absolutely.
I would be remiss if we didn't talk a little bit about the fact that you are a Black and Korean woman who has, throughout your career, broken barriers and is serving in a role today as president of the Raiders. First person like you to hold that position in a very male-dominated industry. How do you, and how have you, throughout your career, sort of navigated the currents of that, where knowing you might be the only person who looks like you, or might be the only woman in the room or person of color in a room? So as young people are looking at you and say, that is a career I would kill for, but also may be dealing with some of these invisible currents, what is your advice to them?
You know, it's that's a great question, the way you phrased it, because a lot of people have said, oh, is it a burden that you're the first, right? The first Black or, you know, Korean American to kind of hold a role. And I always talk about the importance of self-confidence, and I know that's something that kind of grows over time. Some people maybe just naturally have it. Sometimes it happens with experience. Sometimes it happens with, you know, kind of certified wins or just maybe positive affirmations from people that you work with. What I tried to go back to, and it's something that I do every day, is in the appointments, let's say there were gubernatorial appointments for the Gaming Control Board or, you know, votes from the mayor and city council to become city attorney, or Mark Davis kind of just saying, hey, I've heard about you. I'm seeing something in you, and I, you know, want, you know, to do this. If these people had the confidence in me to know that I could do that role, then why wouldn't I have the confidence in myself to be able to do it? So that's something that I, you know, I do remind myself of. If, you know, you're feeling a little, this is kind of chartered territory. Am I the right person to do this? Well, if they saw something in me, why am I not seeing it in myself? And I think that's a really important message, I think, for anyone who's not necessarily maybe trying to change industries or just, you know, kind of get over that imposter syndrome, you know, or any kind of self-doubt or challenges that they may have in themselves. I always say there's enough critics and challenges you're going to have externally. What we can always do is just control our own mindset and be confident in ourselves. And if we're in that position, we're here for a reason. And for the positions that I've been, the leadership positions, you know, right now I work for a team owner who I honestly underestimated the impact that this role was going to have. You know, I'm from here. I was excited to be able to lead an internationally well-known franchise in my hometown. I knew about the connections that the Raiders wanted to make to the community. I knew about the history of the Raiders. And I thought, my goodness, this is a great, you know, experience and opportunity, not only for me, you know, personally at the time deciding to take the position, but for the Raiders. This is the best. And didn't appreciate how many women, how many people of color have been working in sports and professional sports or even minor league, in not just football, basketball, hockey, different places who have said, your appointment now has given me hope to do something else. And that was something that I took for granted. So I will say that, you know, if these people who have been able to put me in these positions, I've obviously worked to kind of get here, to get to a point where I could be even kind of qualified and on the radar. But that's what I would tell people, you know, you're there for a reason. The people who put you there, the person who hired you, the person who's willing to mentor you, to talk to you about your goals, your dreams, or just feedback, believes in you. So, you know, at a minimum, we should be believing in ourselves and hopefully getting to a point where we're comfortable to advocate for ourselves.
I love that. You know, you mentioned the impact on the community, and that is such a reminder that for those outside the sports world, what people who are in the sports world are thinking about, and that it is so much more than just what's happening on the field. You know, every NFL franchise would like to win the Super Bowl next year, and that is one measure of success, but there are many others for a franchise. And I'm curious, you know, how you view a successful year or 5-year period for the Raiders.
You know, this question is timely. We actually just finished some of our annual reviews. And again, when Mark Davis reached out, he knew it was initially about like a nonprofit role. And I told him that it was kind of my experience, but he has been known for saying, and we just had our first gala that was focused on mental health. I told you when the Raiders moved to Las Vegas, we weren't just bringing a football team, we were bringing an army. So to know that his, you know, mission, even before I was with the team, was to have a not just an economic impact on Las Vegas, but the people knew at every kind of step of the way that the Raiders were going to be involved in the community. That makes my job a lot easier because that's where my heart is and has been for some time. You know, I was not born here, but has been raised here. My children have been born here. So to know that is, you know, something that we're taking very responsibly as part of our overall team goals. Obviously, there's going to be professional goals for every individual, but we also have a organizational-wide goal that's dedicated to community service. And this is the first time that we've been able to, I mean, we've obviously track it, but actually track it by hours. And our team has done over 2,500 hours of community service just in the last year. And so that's something that we can all celebrate, right? Whether it be football camps, whether it be volunteering at homeless shelters, whether it be working with our military and veterans community, which is huge here in Las Vegas. So, you know, that community impact is, you know, important. And also, we are a sports team, obviously, and it's important to fan engagement. When I grew up here in Las Vegas, you know, we had the 1990 national NCAA champions of the Renton Rebels. Yes. And I remember, you know, though we didn't have professional sports, so those college athletes coming to elementary school, I mean, that made me, you know, a Renton Rebel fan. That's the type of engagement we want to have. And honestly, you know, it's not just giving back to the community, which is incredibly important. It's team building for the team as well. Those experiences where people are actually donating their time and working together for a greater cause is something that helps us be more connected as Raiders as well.
Yeah. Well, I also have to ask you about this past Super Bowl, because what a moment for the Raiders to host the Super Bowl at Allegiant Stadium. How did that fit into the community impact work that you were doing?
It just was truly aligned. And I have to give a shout out to the NFL for, you know, coming in. Obviously, they're so incredibly talented at putting on kind of these special tentpole events, whether it be Pro Bowl, a draft, and obviously the big kahuna, the Super Bowl. But they were really engaged with us as the home team on talking and asking and talking us, you know, which organizations are doing great work here? You know, what are some of the social justice kind of initiatives that we can work with you to kind of at least plant the seeds on so that you can continue to grow? If you are working with someone, let us know. We can kind of work with them on, you know, giving out these community grants. And I am just so proud that even after the Super Bowl, this show is about people that do public service. Our county commission, which is responsible and kind of governs the Las Vegas Strip, every single county commissioner talked about the positive impact that the Super Bowl had on the community and how engaged we were. And that's a real testament, not just to the NFL, obviously it's to the Raiders, but to the Super Bowl host committee. And I was vice chair of the host committee even before I joined the team on just truly working together, being engaged, being in lockstep. And every time we went to the county with something, all three of the parties, the league, the host committee, and the Raiders were aligned. And, you know, being able to give over $3 million to nonprofits and organizations in the Southern Nevada community, you know, it's everyone was part of this big game, even though maybe not the 65,000 people that were in there, but the impact of the Super Bowl spread so much further beyond that field. And I know that this community is going to be able to reap the benefits for years to come.
Well, that really is a credit to you and the Raiders and others you mentioned, because we've all seen where, you know, promising events come to cities. And you know, they may bring some economic lift to them, but they can also leave city leaders, communities feeling rubbed raw.
Yeah.
You know, they don't often have it, or they don't always, I should say, have a good feeling afterwards. Mm-hmm. So being able to have those reviews and those validations after the event, that's really important.
No, it's incredible. But it all goes back to engagement, right? It all goes back to, you know, making sure that we're engaged with our stakeholders, our public officials who, you know, had the trust in the Raiders to move to Las Vegas and to kind of, you know, build the stadium. And, you know, if it wasn't for the stadium and their trust in the team, the Super Bowl would have never been here. So, you know, just making sure that everyone, honestly, which is difficult, you know, can kind of feel like they have a voice and say on kind of having the biggest sports show on earth, you know, in our home. And, you know, even when the dust has settled and everyone has gone back home, which is fine with me, that we're all able to say, okay, you know, if this were to come back and, you know, this kind of planted a seed in another area that maybe we didn't pay attention to, how can we continue to grow that now on our own as Las Vegans?
Yeah. All right. I have just a couple more questions for you. They are some recurring segments that I like to ask. One of them is, can you tell me about a time where you made a mistake and what you learned from it and how you recovered?
Okay, so this was an interesting, there's an interesting dynamic here, and it was when I was at the city of North Las Vegas. And obviously, I was, when I was appointed, I didn't know this at the time, but I would have been the first Black city attorney in the state of Nevada. And at that same meeting, I actually was asked to present on a bid protest, right? So you had two contractors and one wanted the bid, and it was a significant project, a highway project. And because of the way the bid was written, there were certain aspirational goals for diverse and women-owned businesses to be a part of the project. They were aspirational, though. They were not mandated. And I mentioned to you, you know, the city had gone on some struggling financial times, right? So the lowest bid would have saved the city, obviously, a lot of money, but it didn't necessarily hit that aspirational goal for women and diverse-owned businesses. And it was at the same time of the meeting that I was going to be city attorney. So you had a lot of people in the audience. Literally, the auditorium was full of people saying, hey, this is a goal. You didn't meet the goal. So for these women-owned businesses and minority-owned businesses. But I, as legal counsel, had to say it was aspirational, right? If you look at the actual words of the bid. And so it was not, I don't know if it was a mistake, but the whole room was supportive of me getting the job. But they were like, wait a minute, what is she, what argument is she making here? Because it was, you know, and so for me, it was easy in that I knew legally what the law said. But ultimately, I could give advice to the elected officials that if you do not choose to go this way, you need to be clear on the record as to for the reasons that you're choosing not to go with the lowest bid, which obviously mm-hmm. would have resulted in litigation kind of either way. So I don't know if that was a mistake. It was more of a challenging moment for me that I really learned from. Could I have done it better? Had I known maybe it, and that was another kind of for me being thrust with having an auditorium of people literally listening to every word I was saying outside of just maybe a judge or an arbitrator. But a learning moment for me on, again, communication, even explaining to the public. Like I was talking to my client, which was mayor and council. I would have phrased it differently to not only talk to them, but talk to the auditorium of people behind me as well. So they could have understood the issue. And that, I think, would have helped my client have more additional reasons behind making the decision they ultimately made, if that makes sense.
Yeah. Look, and I always ask this question because, you know, moments of discomfort are so educational for
Absolutely.
Us. You know, we always go back and people who are high achieving, you know, we often spend more time thinking about those things that went a little bit right, you're a little bit wrong, than the ones that went swimmingly. My last question for you. I have this notion that one day I will raise the money and get all the permitting to be able to build a Hall of Fame to staffers and put it on the National Mall. And if I'm able to build a staffer Hall of Fame, I'm wondering if there's anyone who you worked with at the city of North Las Vegas or elsewhere in your career who you would nominate to the Staffer Hall of Fame.
I'm going to nominate, he's actually a current city attorney, but he's not at the city of North Las Vegas, but we work together now. He's dedicated his life to public service. His name is Nicholas Baskoff. He's actually the city attorney for the city of Henderson, but has worked for the Nevada System of Higher Education, has worked for the city of North Las Vegas as well, and has you talk about a true public servant. It's just what's best for that resident and every single thing he do. And I learned from him so much from him when I joined the public sector. So it'd be him.
Terrific. Thank you. I want to build that Hall of Fame because people who do spend time in government and public service really are a treasure. They're a national treasure, whether they are in local government, state government, federal government. And it would be wonderful to be able to recognize them formally in some way. But Sandra, I want to say thank you to you. I've really enjoyed talking with you, getting to know you a little bit and hearing more about your story. So thank you
thank
very
you,
much.
Jim. Thanks for having me.
I want to thank you all for listening to the only show created for and about the people who work in government and politics at any level. I do have a quick favor to ask. Please follow, subscribe, and like the show on all of your favorite podcast platforms. Positive reviews are everything in this business, I'm told. And make sure to sign up for episode alerts at staffershow.com and check out Staffer Show on Twitter, Facebook, Instagram, and LinkedIn. Thanks all.